at zoom.us.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Well, coming up, how well do we understand the founding principles of the United States? Was it a nation founded on God, or more specifically on Christianity? We hear a lot these days about Judeo-Christianity, but did that term exist in 1781 when our Constitution was written? We'll talk about these concepts in a moment, but first, three listener comments about yesterday's program. On it, we heard Florida This Week, and one of the topics on the show was arming teachers in Florida. That's what it seemed almost everyone wanted to talk about yesterday, and that's what these three comments are about.
I'd like to put forth a scenario. The scenario is you're a little 6-7-year-old child is in a class being taught, and the announcement goes over the intercom that there is an active shooter. And your little child is now standing in the corner, hiding behind the desk. Would you rather have the teacher hide behind that desk with your student, with your child, or would you rather have a well-trained, armed teacher standing in the breach, right there, ready? In case anyone comes through the door of your classroom, that teacher has got the drop on them. So what would you rather have? Your unarmed teacher hiding behind the same desk as your little child, shaking, waiting to get killed, or a trained person with a weapon standing between a potential threat and your child? Thank you.
Hi, this is St. Pete. I'm calling about Monday's show. About the guns in school, I don't think it's a good idea. But Republicans want to keep children safe. That's their whole goal with all this guns and school stuff. But their voucher program is going to allow taxpayers' money to go to religious schools, including a Catholic church and school. Okay, here's my question. They have covered up molesting children for decades. So why won't they allow sex offenders to get their rights back to vote, but they're willing to allow our state tax dollars to go to a Catholic church and school that covered up molesting children for decades? I'm not understanding how that makes any sense. Is the Republicans' view in Tallahassee their view of molesting children okay if it's done in the name of God?
This is Ron from Lakeland calling about Monday's 11 o'clock Radioactivity show. You had asked about the possibility of doing mental health screenings for people seeking to buy weaponry and guns. There was a question that came up on air, is there such a possibility or a practice? And there most certainly is. I work in the juvenile justice system, and we have an extensive method of evaluating for mental health issues with our youth who offend. And with sane gun laws, we could easily adapt this screening method where we would look at adverse experiences that people have that cause alienation. We would see family histories. We could look at mental health histories, educational histories, psychosocial backgrounds. If they'd been exposed to violence, if they'd been exposed to any types of abuse, we could look at whether they had any history of fire setting or cruelty to animals. These are the issues we examine when we try to figure out if youth have a chance to offend in the future. And there is extensive work on this. We also look at something called risk and protective factors. For example, if there's academic failure or less than 2 years between siblings, those are things we would look at as a risk. If there's academic success or if the youth has future plans, we would see that as a protective factor. So there is science behind this. It is empiric. It is workable. It functions today in the criminal justice system and could easily be adapted to sane gun laws.
Well, there you have some listener comments that came in after yesterday's program. Our next guest is warning of the dangers of Christian nationalism. Christian nationalists assert that our nation was founded on Judeo-Christian principles. and advocate an agenda based on this historical claim. Our guest says our country is in the grip of Christian nationalism. He's written a new book called The Founding Myth, Why Christian Nationalism is Un-American. Our guest is Andrew Seidel. He's from Madison, Wisconsin. He works as a constitutional attorney at the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and he joins us on the phone. Andrew, welcome to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
All right. So what is Christian nationalism?
You kind of hit it right there in the beginning. It's the idea that the United States was founded as a Christian nation and founded on Judeo-Christian principles, and that we've somehow strayed from that foundation, that we need to return to that those principles on which we are founded, which is fundamentally not true. And that's the claim that I examine in the founding myth.
We hear this term all the time, Judeo-Christian. If we went back to the late 1700s, would we have heard that term here in the U.S.?
No, certainly not. Really, as a term that didn't gain any traction until after World War II, when claims of Christianity would have sounded kind of ominous and exclusive in the wake of World War II. That was when we first really saw the phrase Judeo-Christian principles being used. These are questions that I tackle in the book. The phrase, I think, is intentionally nebulous, and its vagueness insulates the claim we were founded on Judeo-Christian principles from scrutiny. And that's one reason that I don't think any other book out there has ever tackled the questions that I tackle in The Founding Myth.
Was that term derived after World War II to say, look, we know what happened to the Jews in Poland and in Germany, and this is a way to assuage, or this is a way to say to them, you're included, where before World War II we didn't really mention the Jewish faith?
Absolutely. It's meant to sound inclusive. But Christian nationalism as a movement really is not very inclusive. It's incredibly divisive. And when the Christian nationalist throws around that term, Judeo-Christian principles, and this is something I explain pretty clearly in the first chapter of the book, they really do mean Christian principles.
And Judeo is just kind of tagged on?
Yeah, it's sort of this morsel of inclusion. What they mean more than anything is they're referring to the Bible. That's what they're actually getting at when they say Judeo-Christian principles. They mean those principles that you can find if you read the Bible and look at the Bible, including the Ten Commandments, including things like the vicarious redemption of Jesus, hell, the Golden Rule, things like that. And so what I actually do in the book is I go through all of those major principles, and I go through each one of the Ten Commandments, and I compare them to America's founding principles. And what I found was that those Judeo-Christian principles are actually thoroughly opposed to the principles on which the United States was built, that the two systems differ and conflict to such a degree that, to put it bluntly, we can say Christianity is un-American.
All right,
and that's the central claim.
So how did the Ten Commandments conflict with the founding documents?
Great question, and again, I go over each one of the commandments in the book, but the first thing we ought to ask is, which Ten Commandments are we talking about here? Because in any given Bible, there are actually 10 different sets of Ten Commandments. Exodus 20, Exodus 34, Deuteronomy 5, Deuteronomy 27, which most people have no idea that that's the case. But if you want to get down into the substance of it, let's just look at the first commandment that most people understand as, I am the Lord your God, you shall have no other gods before me. Right, that fundamentally conflicts irreconcilably with the American value of religious liberty and religious freedom. Right, it's saying that you can only worship this particular God, whereas our Constitution guarantees the right of every American to worship any God they want, or multiple gods, or no God. And there is this fundamental conflict that just simply can't be reconciled.
You know, when you talk about the Ten Commandments, I went back and looked at the King James Version, and I saw this line in there in the Ten Commandments, 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work. And I was wondering if that was commanding us to work 6 days a week, or was that commanding us complete all our work within 6 days or less?
No, it's an interesting question. I would really encourage everybody to go back and read the Ten Commandments, because I think they will be shocked by some of the things that they find in there. You know, also in the Ten Commandments, you see God promising to punish innocent children for the crimes of their parents to the third and the fourth generation, deliberately punishing innocent kids for the crimes of their parents, which is something that another also runs fundamentally counter to American ideals and values. We see the validation of slavery in the Ten Commandments twice, the subjugation of women, the criminalization of thought, all of that in the Ten Commandments. And it's really striking for people who haven't actually taken the time to read them, and then try to claim that they somehow founded or influenced the founding of this country. It's very, very difficult to make that claim, and as I point out in the founding myth, it really can't be done. There's just too much conflict.
And towards the end of the Ten Commandments, where they talk about not coveting your neighbor's house or thy neighbor's wife, they also talk about not coveting thy neighbor's slaves.
Yeah, slavery is in the Ten Commandments twice, and this is one of the few areas where I do concede that Judeo-Christian principles influence the United States a little bit. There's no doubt that Judeo-Christianity played a huge role in justifying slavery in this country throughout history, and even in the debates about abolition leading up to the Civil War and beyond the Civil War, the debates into segregation, you know, many of the arguments on the side of oppression were religious arguments. So this is an influence that we have to concede here, but it's not a positive influence. It's an influence that we've been struggling to get away from, and it really proves the point that I'm trying to make overall, which is Judeo-Christian principles didn't positively influence the United States. We were not built on those principles, and it's a good thing we weren't. That's the kind of point that I'm trying.
But wouldn't it be fair to say that the Ten Commandments, the three of them, do outlaw lying, stealing, and killing, so our laws are based on those three principles?
Some of them are, but, and again, I get into this in depth in the book because this was fascinating to me, because I assumed, like you, that I would have to concede that influence. But first of all, those are universal human truths that all societies that are remotely successful that we agree with have reached on their own. We know that every different country and people have arrived at those rules without the Bible on their side. So we can't claim those principles for Judeo-Christianity without a huge amount of arrogance. And the second problem with that is that in the Bible, those principles were not universally applied the way they are here in the United States. Those really only applied to your fellow believers, and people are going to have to pick up the book to really understand why.
Our guest is Andrew Seidel. The book is The Founding Myth, Why Christian Nationalism is Un-American, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Andrew, who are the Christian nationalists? If you were to look on TV or look in the bookstore, if you were to look at around college campuses, who are the main purveyors of Christian nationalism?
That's a great question, and I do try to lay this out in the beginning of the book as well. I mean, Donald Trump is a very adept Christian nationalist, very good at employing Christian nationalist rhetoric. Mike Pence certainly is, too. You know, one of his favorite lines, he introduces himself all the time this way. He said it at the Republican National Convention. I'm a Christian, a conservative, and a Republican in that order, he claims. I mean, that's Christian nationalism writ large. A lot of Trump's cabinet members, Betsy DeVos, Rick Perry also. But you see it everywhere, in Congress, at state level politics, and not just in politics, but also in conservative religion. Jerry Falwell Jr. And even in the scholarly arena, there are a few Christian nationalists out there, and we're seeing it now work its way. The lies and the myths that really underlie this political theology are driving public policy now. Education, immigration, civil rights, judges are deciding cases on the basis of these lies and myths, and they're really gnawing away at our liberty. And I think that we, the people, have a duty to stand up to the lies and to the bullies pushing them, because in America, patriotism has no religion.
You know, I think it's fair to say that the word Jesus never shows up in the Constitution nor in the Declaration of Independence, but the word God does, doesn't it, in the Declaration, not in the Constitution?
Not in the Constitution, which was a deliberately godless document. And I do have quite a few chapters on the Declaration of Independence, and I even examine each of the supposedly religious phrases that are mentioned in the Declaration, the laws of nature and of nature's God, their creator, the divine judge of the world, divine providence and the supreme judge of the world. I went and looked at each of those, and I tell the story about first how they made it into the document, and then also why they were put there. And did they really evidence this idea that we are based on some sort of belief in a deity or not? And the answer is, it turns out, no.
So what did they believe? What did the founders believe?
And that, to me, is one of the most fascinating questions out there. I love debating whether or not the founders were Christian or agnostic or deist or theist. But at its core, that debate actually doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to the claim that we are a Christian nation for a couple reasons. One, because even if they were all Christians, you would still have to show that those religious beliefs somehow influenced the founding of the United States. And you can't do that. And the reason you can't do it is because those religious beliefs often stand so fundamentally opposed to the values on which the founders chose to build this country, which is exactly what I explain in the book.
We only have a few minutes left, so I'm kind of jumping around here. But one of the Ten Commandments is thou shalt not commit adultery. You talked about Donald Trump being one of the biggest Christian nationalists in the U.S. I'll leave that for other people to decide. But I want to ask you about a guy who was one of our founders named Governor Morris. Was he a governor, or was governor his first name?
Yeah, so it is probably pronounced Gouverneur, but we're not entirely sure. Governor Morris, we don't really know.
But that was his first name, Gouverneur. Okay.
That was his first name.
Now, what was his attitude towards adultery?
He was a really interesting character. He actually spoke more at the Constitutional Convention than any of the other founders. He actually wrote the final draft of the Constitution. So, you know, they kind of, after they had all the principles established, they gave it to this Committee on Style, and they gave it to Gouverneur Morris to write up. So he's the one who gave us the words, "We the People." So this really influential character that not many people know anything about. And if you're looking at whether or not the founders were Christian and embody the kind of Christian ethos that is claimed, it's hard to say that about Gouverneur Morris. I mean, this is a guy who was kind of known as a little bit of a playboy. And for instance, when he was our minister to France, he had sex with a married woman in a convent, which is not something that you would typically think of as a very Christian thing to do.
And he was pretty proud. I mean, he didn't just have sex in a convent. He had it in a carriage. He had it all over with different, not with his wife, but with women that he was dating, even though he was married.
Yeah, and his diary makes for very, very fascinating reading. And you know, I tell the story of just a few of the founders just to make the point that, first of all, you can't prove that they were all Christian. I mean, George Washington, really never used any Christian language in any of his thousands of pages of private letters. We know he didn't pray in the snow at Valley Forge. That's a myth that was deliberately invented about him to sell books. When he was on his deathbed, he didn't have a pastor or a preacher or any religious figure there to deliver last rites or anything like that. Thomas Jefferson took a razor to the Bible, literally excising all the supernatural, the virgin births, the angels, all of that. So we know that a lot of the founders were not Bible-believing Christians, certainly not in the sense that we would think of today.
I know we're almost out of time, but I want to ask you about In God We Trust and One Nation Under God. On our money, it says In God We Trust. In the Pledge of Allegiance, it says One Nation Under God. When were these added to the money and to the pledge?
I mean, these are huge talking points for Christian nationalism, and I devote the whole last part of the book to a lot of these phrases, and none of them date to the founding era. They actually all date to times of national fear and strife when the country was tearing itself apart, and what you had happen was a few men abused their public power and their public office to promote their personal religion, to impose their God on the rest of the country, and they deliberately took advantage, and they knew they were doing it, of those times of national fear and strife. And it's not just that, but they were also erasing these previously unifying mottos. You know, the original pledge said one nation, indivisible, and then you're literally dividing the indivisible with God. You know, our original de facto motto was e pluribus unum, from many people, one country, from many states, one nation. And you have that wiped out in favor of this divisive motto, In God We Trust.
Well, Andrew, I wish we had more time, but thank you for coming on WMNF. Do you have a website?
I would encourage everybody to find me on social media, Andrew L. Seidel. That's my handle on everything. Or visit ffrf.org. That's the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And that's where I work to defend the First Amendment every single day.
All right. Well, Andrew Seidel, thanks a lot for coming on WMNF.
It was my pleasure, Rob. Thank you.
Thanks. Take care. That's Andrew Seidel. He is an attorney who lives in Madison, Wisconsin. He works as a constitutional attorney at the Freedom From Religion Foundation, litigating cases involving religion and the Constitution. And he's just written a book called The Founding Myth, Why Christian Nationalism is Un-American. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Sean in our newsroom says that in Pinellas County, there's a crash on I-275 northbound. This is at exit 32. That's 4th Street North. The three left lanes are blocked. So, Sean, thank you for that. And some emails have come in, too. Bill says, a great subject about the guest. And Gerard writes this, Dominionists in Washington, D.C. don't want a seat at the table. They want total dominion over every aspect of everyone's life. Search them on the interweb. And Gerard, thank you for that. That topic has come up a time or two here on WMNF. And here's an email from 239. This person anonymously writes, lying has been normalized in this country even before dishonest Donald Trump became president after losing the election, writes 239. Well, we're going to open up the phone lines and take some phone calls in just a moment. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. And our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Frank Knox is our phone producer today. I want to go back to the top of the show and just play this comment from a listener about guns. And yesterday we were discussing the voluntary program around the state where school boards are allowed to decide whether or not teachers can step forward and take some training and arm themselves with guns in the classroom. And most school districts so far are rejecting that idea. Most of the school districts here in the Tampa Bay area are rejecting the idea, but some school districts, especially in rural areas, are saying it's a good idea. Here's what one listener said yesterday after the show when we were talking about that topic. This is what he said about why it's a good idea to arm teachers.
I'd like to put forth a scenario. The scenario is you're a little 6-7-year-old child is in a class being taught, and the announcement goes over the intercom that there is an active shooter. And your little child is now standing in the corner hiding behind the desk. Would you rather have the teacher hide behind that desk with your student, with your child, or would you rather have a well-trained, armed teacher standing in the breach right there, ready, in case anyone comes through the door of your classroom, that teacher has got the drop on them? So what would you rather have? Your unarmed teacher hiding behind the same desk as your little child, shaking, waiting to get killed, or a trained person with a weapon standing between a potential threat and your child? Thank you.
All right. There was a listener yesterday talking about the guns in school issue, giving us his scenario. But is that the only scenario you can envision for protecting kids in schools? You've got an unlocked door. You've got somebody that was able to get in with a gun. And the only protection you have for your six-year-old who's shaking there behind the desk is the teacher. And this gentleman suggests that we ought to arm the teacher so that teacher, she or he, could stand between your six-year-old and the door and begin shooting back. Is that the only scenario that you can envision? Or might there be another way to protect that your child and your school? 813-239-9663. We're going to take some phone calls, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. And let's go to Steve in Tampa. Steve, thanks for calling in. What would you like to say?
Yeah, hey, Rob. I wanted to comment on the guest, but as far as the teacher with the gun, since I don't have any kids in school, sounds like a great idea.
Okay, you like arming teachers? Okay, and Steve, what else would you like to tell us?
What I really called to talk about is, I don't know if you have heard any of conservative talk radio, but their new ploy, and they've had him on for a while, is they have several Jewish talk show hosts who put this stuff out, and I guess all I can figure is that they're conservative Jews, and they figure they're going to come after all the liberal ones like me first, and they'll, you know, spare them. I don't know, but there's this guy named Dennis Prager on, and another guy, Mark Levin, and you know, they're constantly talking about how we're a Christian nation and we were founded on Judeo-Christian ethics and on and on and on. And I find that rather interesting.
Yeah, you know, I was really convinced, because there's a lot of footnotes in Andrew Seidel's book. I was really convinced that, the reason why Under God was put in the pledge, it was written by Francis Bellamy in the late 1800s and then put in the pledge in the 1950s, was the McCarthy era, to separate ourselves from the communist Soviet Union, which was widely believed to be atheistic. And so it was a way to separate ourselves. And this idea, you know, that we're a Judeo-Christian society, I think the footnotes are pretty good, that this term Judeo-Christian doesn't really come into common usage until after World War II here in the U.S., as the folks are trying to say to Jewish people who have suffered this immeasurable Holocaust, that you're part of our country too. And
well, you should hear, you know, people like Dennis. He'll be on there talking about how Christianity is the greatest safeguard to the Jewish religion in this country, and Christians will protect good Jewish people, and on and on. And it's a fascinating thing to listen to.
Yeah, well, I love books with footnotes, and I don't think Dennis Prager has many footnotes beyond the people that he believes and talks to. The great thing about Seidel's book is that he goes back to the original documents, including James Madison's work and other works around the time that the Constitution was written. So,
well, they always go to that. They can't get through an hour without going back to the Founding Fathers. The Founding Fathers believe this, and the Founding Fathers believe that, and, you know.
All right. Well, Steve, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks a lot, man.
All right, thanks. I should get Seidel back, our guest back, when he's got more time. Let's go to Nona in St. Petersburg. Hi, Nona. You're on MNF. What would you like to
say? Thank you very much. I'm all for teachers being armed. I was a teacher years ago, and I taught fifth grade, and we had security very well down the path. But another thing about this, Seidel, I think he should turn around and pay a little more attention to his being a lawyer and stop working so much against the Catholics and the Protestants and the Jews. I think he should stop looking at their forefathers and start concentrating on something else. That's all I got to say.
All right. And Nona, what gun do you feel that you would be qualified to operate in a classroom?
Well, when I was down in Ecuador, that was back in the 50s, 59, I used a 45, a Navy 45. And today, you don't have to have a gun that heavy, but they've got better guns, lighter guns for women. And I think women are capable of protecting themselves as well as the children that they have in their classrooms.
And Nona, where would you hide your gun if you were a teacher these days? Where would you hide it in your classroom?
Well, you'd have to put it in your drawer when you're teaching, and when you're getting up and walking around, you better put it on your hip and keep it handy. So the children would know it. They'd feel safer that their teacher has a gun. And I think overall, the parents would feel safer too, because you have to put somebody in control. And the teacher is the first person that's in control, and that person should turn around and take care of the children.
And do you think you would have more control if you were wearing a gun strapped to your hip?
Oh, yes. Oh,
yeah. You think the students would listen to you better?
No. The children would know that you are protecting them. And you tell them this all the time, that I'm here for your protection, just like your
parents.
But
what about those students that talk back to the teacher? Do you think that you would have less talk back if you were packing?
Definitely. Otherwise, you'd have to send them back down to the principals, like most of the times they do.
Yeah, so it's just better to have a gun in the classroom and pack a gun, and then all these unruly students, they would shut up.
I think children would be afraid of you.
And that's what you want as a teacher. You, as a good teacher, you want the children to be afraid of you, right?
Afraid of you, and know that that you're there. Your parents, they love their parents, and sometimes they're afraid of their parents when their parents holler at them, and they're afraid. They think something might happen to them.
And Nona, how do you think we can get more students to be afraid of their teachers? Maybe if we got a bigger gun, do you think that would help?
No, just a small gun that would turn around and serve the purpose would turn around and be a detriment to somebody else coming in the classroom after these children. And I think the children would be feeling very, very protective if the teacher had a gun, just like at home. A lot of these children, their fathers and mothers have guns at home. So you see all the guns that are bought. I don't have a gun, never did. But I know when I lived down in Ecuador, we turn around and had guns down there.
Oh, I thought you had a 45.
Maybe 45, and they're wonderful guns.
Yeah, but you did or you didn't have a gun? I'm just...
I did have a gun down in Ecuador. When I had a ranch up in Brooksville, I had guns too. But now that I'm in the city, I don't have any guns.
And you know, it's probably good that parents have guns, because then the kids all grow up to be perfect kids, right? If the father waves the gun around, if the kid is being unruly, let's say the father wants to change the TV channel to his favorite TV show, the kid isn't going to give any talk back, right?
Well, that's being childish. I mean, to me, come on now. If parents are going to be that devious waving guns around unless they're nuts, and then they should have a gun in the first place. But I think a child, if a child understands what a gun does and how it protects them, that's wonderful.
All right. Nona, thanks a lot. Yes. Thanks. All right.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Thanks, Nona. All right. What do you think about what Nona said? Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Let's go to Mike in Brooksville. Mike, you're on. What would you like to say?
How you doing? You guys are sounding pretty good today. I'm in guns in the classroom. My wife is a teacher, and it's not necessary that guns are actually in the classroom first, but that the threat of guns being in the classroom are a major parameter for anybody that wants to invade the classroom. The possibility of a gun might be a major deterrent. If guns are in the classroom, there are technologies to have smart guns only activated by the owner.
And Mike, Brooksville is Hernando County. Is that where Brooksville
is?
Okay, so
right.
So is the Hernando School District going to allow your wife to pack?
I'm not sure what they're doing.
Will she do it if, let's say, they allow her to do it?
No, she's anti-gun.
Oh, so you're kind of disappointed in her?
No, not at all. She's one of the best teachers there is.
Well, but aren't you afraid that she's going to go to school and she's not packing and the school could be invaded?
It's always a possibility, isn't it? But she doesn't want to compromise her integrity by packing heat.
All right, Mike, thanks a lot.
On the Christian nation, all the largest atrocities have been committed in the name of some religion or not. The only way to end a religious war is that the faith actually dies. So genocide is a necessary end to a religious war. On that note, that's one reason I'm an atheist, but also if we all live like Jesus told us to live, the world would be a nicer place, wouldn't it?
Yeah, if we all loved each other. And Mike, thanks a lot. Thanks for your phone call. Great to hear from you. Here's an open line, 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. And you are listening to WMNF in Tampa. And Gina writes this, I can hardly believe I'm hearing so many pro-arming teachers. I submit that a practice simulated active shooter situation is a far cry from a real-life, split-second, chaotic situation, writes Gina. And Charles in Tampa said they don't put seatbelts in buses in large part because the kids would whack each other with them, so we're going to put more guns in schools and expect everything to work out just fine, even though in the last month we have three examples of guns going off by accident, including in a school from a security officer. How ludicrous. Yeah, mentioned that yesterday. Is that right here in the Tampa Bay area, three incidents involving guns going off accidentally in a public space. One in a school in Pasco County last week, where the 2 weeks ago, where the deputy was in the cafeteria next to a student, and he had a 9mm weapon. Apparently, the safety was either off or non-existent on that gun. He's leaning against the wall, and the gun goes off. Luckily, the bullet goes into the wall. It doesn't harm any of the students, but you can bet that. There's going to be a big discussion in Pasco County about whether or not there should be armed people in school and whether or not that kind of 9mm weapon is even appropriate to bring into a school where the safety seems to have a problem. Another example where a man killed one of his coworkers the other day, I think it was in eastern Hillsborough County, as he was getting ready for work, and they were both arriving at the job site, and his gun went off at the job site, killing a coworker. And then another example where in a grocery store, and I think this was in Pasco County too, where a woman is getting her groceries along with her husband, and she's got a purse in her purse at the grocery store. She's carrying a two-shot Derringer that doesn't have a safety at all, and the gun goes off. It goes through the husband's leg. Luckily, he's not seriously injured, and just examples of where you carry guns in public, and people are either untrained or they're carrying a gun that shouldn't be out in public because it doesn't have a safety. And, you know, horrible things happen. We're lucky that no kids were killed in that Pasco County school. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to John in Port Richey. John, you're on M&F. What would you like to say?
Hey, thanks. A couple of things. I'm a teacher here in Pasco County, and I had a student come in with an open carried weapon on his hip. He came in twice, actually. Didn't make me feel much secure or safer. Matter of fact, it kind of threw me off the first time I saw him with the weapon on his hip. And I had another student come in with a concealed weapon, and I know that they had it in their on their possession concealed because they let me know that. In both of those cases, I did not feel any more secure or safe because there was a weapon in the classroom. Second, this caller that says you got a choice of either your teacher there protecting you or not protecting you, that's a false dichotomy. You could put bulletproof glass in where you have to have windows in a classroom. You could put in bulletproof walls. You can put in bulletproof doors. They could automatically lock when the sound of gunfire. You could put in corridors or section off the schools to where you can sequester that shooter in a particular part. You could put in safe rooms into the classroom. There's all kinds of alternatives here. But the cheapest way to do this is to put the burden of the cost of protecting our students onto the teachers by having them buy the guns, not put the cost of providing safety to our students on the state where they would have to make sure the schools are secure.
Yeah, I think just hardening the doors, you know, to that caller who said, "What would you do with your 6-year-old who was hiding behind the desk?" I would make sure that that teacher was protected by a solid door. That you're right, a projectile could not go through bulletproof glass, and that would seem to take care of the problem. If every classroom was a secure area that could be locked down.
I heard a story about a young lady. I think she was in middle school, where she came up with an idea of making a bulletproof walls that you could stick up and hide behind.
John, what happened? I was unclear. What happened to the student who was carrying a gun using the open carry laws into your school building?
Well, he wasn't using an open carry law. He was actually a Pasco County sheriff, and he came in, and he had just a shirt on that said sheriff. And after class, after the second time I asked him, I said, "I didn't think you're allowed to carry a gun in on the campus." And he said, "If I'm in a uniform, I can carry my gun wherever I go." So I'm like, okay. So he came in. He's like, "Yeah, I got to go to work after class." So he came in his uniform, dressed with the weapon on his hip.
I see. So you're a community college professor, or you're a college professor?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Pasco County State College.
All right.
The other student was a sheriff in Pinellas County, and she wanted to come up here because I guess she didn't want to go to school there. And she came through what looks like a metal detector in the library, but it's actually one of those things that read the books. And she's like, "I don't think that metal detector works." I'm like, "Why?" Because she's like, "I got a gun in my purse, and it didn't go off."
Well, how did the fellow students feel about the sheriff's deputy carrying a weapon into a classroom?
I never asked them.
Okay. John, thanks a lot.
All right.
We're taking some more phone calls in just a second. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. James writes this: "Teachers are not paid enough now for the job they do. These gun nuts want them to be Rambos. I'm so disgusted with half the people in this country," writes James. All right, James, thank you for your thoughts. Let's go back to the phones. We're going to go to Kevin in Bradenton. Kevin, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob, great program today. You know, I was going to talk about the Christian nationalism, but I just want to touch on what everybody else is talking about for 1 minute. Hey, I wonder if there's any way that we can find out how many times guns have been accidentally discharged in public places. You know how we found out it happened 3 times here in the last week in our area? I mean, you know, doesn't it make you wonder that if there's 300 million guns in the country, I just wondered all of a sudden, I wonder how many times this goes on a national basis that we don't know about guns being discharged accidentally. And the reason I say that is because I was in Bend, Oregon, and a woman came into the hospital and she put her purse down and the gun went off. And and it didn't shoot anybody, but it just made me aware even then how easily that can happen. And the other thing about the school shooters is if people think that the shooters are going to be afraid to go in because they think that there might be a gun in there, what makes you think, or what would make anyone think, that those kids wouldn't just, you know, take the time to put on body armor or something, and then they could go in there and still have the ability to not have to worry about somebody having a gun. But anyway, I you know how I feel about that situation. I think the answer is not more guns, but the thing about them discharging accidentally, I think, is a really good, important
Those numbers should be kept. Kevin, thanks a lot. You know, I think the Centers for Disease Control is being prevented from calculating gun injuries and gun deaths around the country. I know Mother Jones Magazine, though, does have an interesting website, and they look at mass shootings, which are shootings that involve three or more victims. And they've kept pretty good track of that around the country. But as for accidental shootings, I don't know if that's being kept at all. And that's an interesting question, Kevin. Thanks for raising it. I think somebody should do that. And this is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Let's go to Wendell in St. Petersburg. Wendell, you're on.
Oh, yes. Hey, good morning, Rob. Yeah, I think it's absurd, obviously, with having the guns in the classroom. Everyone acts like a handgun is going to be a good defense against, you know, one of these AK assault weapons. And just like the other gentleman said, you know, the kids that are assaulting classes are not going to be afraid of death. Obviously, they're, you know, because they're most likely will end up getting shot or hurt very badly. I also think that I like the way that you were kind of teasing that woman about, yeah, get bigger guns and make the children afraid of the teachers. You know, that's also kind of absurd. And the third point is that everyone acts like that only the other people are crazy enough to shoot people in class or just unarmed people. With teachers arming guns, all the teachers, there's going to be so much abuse. I can imagine teachers being mad at somebody else. It doesn't even have to be in school, but they have access to a gun. And if they wanted to do somebody else in, I mean, again, it's absurd, of course, thinking that way. But everyone acts like, oh, I would never be that crazy enough to do that. But you do. People, normal people do this kind of thing all the time. And putting guns in the classrooms, we act like teachers are going to be shooting their spouses, shooting their, you know, their neighbors, shooting people they just don't agree with because all of a sudden they have access to a gun. And it's going to be, you know, it's going to be absurd. And what would people do if you had two schools? One school had all the people, you know, decked out in guns. Another school where there were no guns. I wonder what how the parents would allow their, which school would the parents allow their children to really safe in? You know,
that's a good question. Where would you feel the child was safest? Yeah, Wendell, right. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the phone call. Good to hear from you. Here's somebody calls themselves authentic. They say, I'm from Rhode Island, and we all know this up there, but most Americans don't know this. Rhode Island broke off from Massachusetts Bay Colony for religious freedom, freedom from practicing the King James Version of the Bible. As a result, the First Baptist Church, the First Unitarian Church, and the first Jewish synagogues were all built in Rhode Island during colonial times, before there ever was an American Revolution. Rhode Island gave the concept of religious freedom to the Constitution. Yeah, I think if I recall my history correctly, Massachusetts was largely a Catholic colony. And if you were, for example, a Quaker, you're right there in Boston is one of the scenes where a woman who was a practicing Quaker was killed by a crowd in Boston way back when. So thank you, Authent, for that. And let's go back to the phones. We're going to go to Jim in St. Pete. We haven't had a woman call in. I think we had some women drop off. But if you're a woman, call in at 813-239-9663. Let's go to Jim in St. Petersburg. We did have one woman earlier, but Jim, you're on. What would you like to say?
Yeah, I'd like to say that I'm in favor of having the option of having a teacher armed.
Okay, why?
Class. Pardon me?
Why?
Because you need somebody there to defend the children.
Okay, and so where does a greater threat come from? The shooter who comes into the building from outside, or from the let's say you have six teachers who volunteer in every school to have guns, or maybe you have three or
greater
eight.
Threat comes
where
from
does a greater threat come from?
the greater threat comes from outside.
Okay. And where do you hide the gun?
You keep it in a locked box in your desk.
Okay, so if somebody comes
carrying it.
Okay, so the shooting in Parkland in Florida took about 4 minutes to accomplish. How much time would it take for you to run to your locked box, unlock it, and open it up?
If I'm sitting at my desk teaching the children as I'm supposed to be doing, it would take me about 10 seconds to reach inside, unlock the box, and have the gun. Lock the door, barricade inside. You don't go searching for somebody to shoot.
Wouldn't the first step be to lock the door and barricade inside instead of reaching for the gun first?
If you had allowed me to speak, that's exactly what I continue to say. You don't go searching for somebody to shoot. You stay inside, you wait for the police.
I'm happy to let you talk, but you said you would go for the gun first before you lock the door. I think it's the other way around. You lock the door first, and then you go for the gun.
Splitting hairs, bud.
Okay, bud. Jim, thanks a lot. Thanks for your phone call.
Just hang on a second.
Well, Jim, you know, I don't know if you were ever a student, or I don't know if you're ever a teacher, but in a classroom, it's hard to lock something away and not have a student figure out a way to get at it. If you were ever in high school, you know that high school students roam around those classrooms and know every inch of it, especially while the teacher's out. So I don't know why you'd think that it would be safe to have a gun in a classroom.
I don't see how you think it's safe having somebody cowering, waiting for somebody to kick the door in and shoot them up, as opposed to at least having the ability to shoot back.
You know, I know a lot of construction people. There are ways that you can build a door so it can't be kicked in. I mean, I see in movies doors kicked in, but if you have a well-built door, a steel door with strong glass in it that's bulletproof, no shooter is going to get past that steel door. I mean, you can harden schools, and that would be one way to do it without arming teachers.
But you don't think it's possible to have a locked box with a gun in it that the children can't get into, something that's secured to the wall or whatever.
Well, the teacher's got to have a key.
That's right.
Yep. And the teacher's got to have a key.
And they wouldn't be able to go and just grab the gun either, would they?
Yeah, but, you know, the students are very clever.
Yeah,
anyway.
Well, people are very clever. They'll blow in your door if they're really determined.
Well, I don't think that's true, Jim. I don't think you ever work construction. Jim, thanks a lot. Thanks for your phone call. Great to hear from you. And let's go to Rennie in Venice. Rennie, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, welcome back, Rob.
Thank you.
Back on the air.
Thank you.
I just want to say that the goal here is to protect our young ones, our children.
That's right.
And if we look at statistics, guns are dangerous. Whether you're trained or not, they can accidentally fire. And you're putting people at risk by arming every teacher and really take a hard look at the statistics.
Yeah, there's no doubt that deputy in Pasco County the other day was well-trained. But somehow,
right,
he fired his gun in a classroom full of students.
Guns are dangerous. I think we should protect our children. I think the construction ideas about the secure door and a secure building make a lot more sense. And I'm an active shooter, okay? I know how dangerous guns are. I just want my kids to be protected.
Yeah. All right. Rennie, thanks a lot. Great to hear from you.
Good to hear
all
from
right.
you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And let's go to Chris in Seminole. Chris, you're on WMNF. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. I'm a teacher in Pinellas County. I've been a teacher for 20 years. I don't hear very many people talking about mental health. I don't hear people talking about empathy. I don't hear people talking about loving their kids. You got to talk to these kids. I talk to my kids after every shooting. We get together and we talk. I want to know how they feel. A lot of them are numb to this now. They don't know what to say. They do not, under any circumstances, want guns in their classroom. Can you, Rob, imagine the level of a mind, like the woman who called in earlier? Can you imagine the level of this woman's mind who wants to scare children by carrying a gun on her hip? And that's what she wants America to look like in our schools, is to have teachers armed at the hip and have them just sitting there. And that'll intimidate students. That's exactly how you want to work with students. We are so much better than this. I called in about a week or so ago. You were out. But we are so much better than this, and we don't give ourselves enough credit. It's black and white with people with guns. Oh, I'm going to protect your six-year-old kid with a gun. I think three things. I'll try and be brief. Let's bring in pitchforks and torches and scythes and slingshots Let's bring in crossbows. Let's bring in every kind of weapon you could possibly think of, because all of them are not as lethal as guns. Two, we need to bring in mental health counselors to talk to students, period. Most of all these shootings that have taken place are students who are disgruntled in some way and upset, and students knew about it beforehand. Teachers knew about it beforehand, but we didn't get to those kids in time. Having a gun is going to wind up in one of two situations. Someone's going to get hurt, or someone's going to get injured. Do you want your teacher shooting a student? Psychologically, do you know what that does to a school? Do you know what that does to a teacher? Do you know how hard it would be for a teacher to come back after they killed a student in a school? I don't think I wouldn't be able to survive it. I wouldn't be able to live myself, even if I was defending my students. The last thing I want to point out is a caller called in a few weeks ago to talk about the military, and anybody that operates or handles a weapon or works in munitions has to have mental health screening every 6 months or so to make sure that they're handling these weapons properly. For teachers that are going to be carrying, I see nothing in place. There's no mental health checks for teachers, even right now. For teachers carrying a gun, who's going to monitor that? Final conclusion. Who's going to pay for the guns? Who does this help? Bullet manufacturers, NRA, gun manufacturers. Who does talking to your kids in your community? And I love the guy that called in and was so flip and said, I don't have kids. I don't care. Sounds like a great idea. Well, good for you. I'm glad you think about just yourself. You've got a whole community here, and it takes a community to raise our kids. So I'm completely against this. I can't even believe we're talking about this idea. It's insane to me.
Yeah, you know,
we have SROs in our school who carry guns right now. They're licensed. They're police officers. How many of them have stopped shootings? I don't even know if we have those statistics.
I was blown away by that one caller who said that she wanted to carry a gun to intimidate the students. But Chris, let me ask you this: in your school in Pinellas County, is your classroom a safe environment? Would you feel protected? Can you lock the door to your classroom or the doors to your classroom if there was a shooter in the hallway?
Talking about
this,
it's insane to me.
Yeah,
SROs in our
Chris, you're listening to 30 seconds ago on our delay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel
I'm on a delay? I'm sorry.
Do you feel protected in your classroom? Is your classroom hardened?
I do feel protected in my classroom, very much so. I feel protected. You know why I feel protected in my classroom, the school I'm in? I know a lot of our students, and I know our teachers know a lot of our students, and I know our administration knows a lot of our students. It's very difficult to get onto our campus right now, too. You have to go through one entrance. I'm sure students could find ways in, but it's almost always a student who returns to the school. Why can't we meet them instead with a handgun and instead with open arms in conversation about what's wrong with them?
All right, Chris, thanks a lot. Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
All right, it's great to hear from a teacher. Let's go to Rita in Lake Wales. Rita, you're on WMNF.
Yeah, hi. I used to be a school social worker, and I don't know why that prior caller thought that teachers sit behind desks. That's not where they teach from. They are all over the classroom talking and doing their exhibits, and they're out in the playground, and they're out in hallways, and the kids are very smart. They watch what you're doing. They know where your purse is. They get angry. I had necklaces ripped off. I mean, if you had a gun on your hip, that would last probably one day. So I don't see teachers being armed as a solution. Even well-trained people in the military, I mean, there's the term friendly fire. There's accidental shootings all the time. Cops are always having accidental shootings, accidental and non-accidental. And we're going to have a massive amount of kids being shot once teachers are armed on a regular basis. It's just not going to work. And I personally have two relatives who were very nice guys, very well-trained. One was a cop, and they had guns. And these two particular relatives both had an accidental discharge of their firearm in their home. And nobody was hurt, but, I mean, nobody keeps track of all those ones where nobody's hurt.
And even being well-trained. Rita, could you figure out a safe place to hide the key? Let's say there's a lockbox where you hid your gun in your classroom. Could you figure out a place to hide the key where it would be safe from all the students that you've known?
No. Even if it was in your pocket, I mean, teachers aren't standing still. They're not sitting behind a desk. They're going into the cabinet and getting at their science equipment. They're like I said, they're on the playground. They're bending down. They're helping kids. You know, sometimes they're in the restroom.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, Rita, thanks a lot. I'm sorry to say we're out of time, but thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, Rita, thank you. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. We'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to have one of those state senators that opposes arming teachers. He'll be on the show tomorrow. This is WMNF Tampa. Stay tuned.